My name is Sheridan Delaroo and I'm a student at Berwick High School. I'm researching the physical changes of Berwick Bush Nursing Hospital between 1939 and 1980, which were made possible by various fundraising avenues. With me is Dr. Mel Stevenson, who has been associated with the Berwick Hospital since 1950. During this time, Dr. Stevenson has not only acted as medical practitioner, but also as president and guardian of the hospital. Dr. Stevenson, you first became involved with the hospital in 1950. Could you describe your first impressions of the hospital?
Yes, Sheridan, thank you. My first impression was that it was a weatherboard building, pretty old. It had been a school, as you know, in the past. It had six beds for patients. It had three nursing staff who also lived in that building. We had two domestics who were living out of the building. There were also brick foundations that had been set up along Gloucester Avenue, but they were only built up to floor level, and this was for a new wing that had been planned for some years and had never got past that stage. And a bit depressing, the thistles were growing up through the bearers of the floors, and that was about as far as they had got. It was a bit of a sad looking place at that stage. You ask whether I was apprehensive. Well, I hadn't envisaged the future. I think it's important to have a vision of what you think might happen, but that vision is not in any detail. Looking back on it, I think perhaps if I had known what I was getting involved in, yeah, sure, I would have probably been apprehensive. But at that stage I wasn't apprehensive because I didn't know what was going to happen.
During your association with the hospital, what physical changes have you witnessed?
Well, we saw those brick foundations extended, and that became the Percy Langmore wing. That was opened in 1953, I think. That gave us a total of 11 beds, a theatre, a labour ward, and a relocated kitchen. That was opened for £18,000, and that was fully equipped. It was opened in 53, and was paid for by 1959. Following that, in the early 1960s, we opened a nurse's home. That was at £35,000. That was opened debt-free. That allowed us to move our nursing staff out of the main building, which gave us a total then of 15 beds in the hospital. The main building, which you see today, that's the big one with the car park underneath, allowed us to raise our total to 23 beds. And that cost $850,000 at this stage. The hostel was built. That was an adaptation of the nurse's home, and that was opened in 1980 at $180,000. So overall there's been a lot of building. There's also been purchase of land around the hospital over that period of time.
Amongst these developments, which have made the most significant impact upon the hospital regarding innovative technology? Has it been a lot easier to work with?
Well, sure, technology has made it a lot easier. Of course, it depends on what you mean by technology, I suppose. The cook looks at technology as being better cooking facilities and microwave ovens and all that stuff. We used to have a Coke stove, for example, and if the wind was blowing in one direction, you cooked scones, and if it was blowing in the other direction, you did a roast. It depended on whether you wanted cooked fast or cooked slow. See, so technology sure has made a difference in the cookhouse. Of course, from the actual hospital itself, from the medical point of view, we've got new anaesthetic machines, we've got new theatre tables, theatre lights, all that's important, defibrillators. Cardiograph machines, resuscitators, insulin cots, they're all there. And of course, if you've got the gear, if you've got the equipment, it makes it much easier to work and more satisfying because you feel you can do a better job.
Obviously the changes in technology improved the hospital standards, but did this enable it to be compared with other bush nursing hospitals? Could it be placed on a par with competitors, for instance, the Packenham Bush Nursing Hospital.
Ah, let us not be partisan. Of course we're better than Packenham. I think that we started behind scratch, but I think now we will be one of the foremost. We have a lot of good equipment, and I think probably we are as good, if not better, equipped than comparable hospitals and even larger hospitals. We've got the equipment there, the modern equipment, to handle most situations.
During your service to the hospital as president, has the major decision-making regarding developments, etc., remained your responsibility, or was it shared by other concerned members?
I think a chairman has, he's got several roles, and one of these is to think ahead. And it's, I feel the role of a chairman is to float ideas, that is, put up suggestions, think about what you're trying to do, think about the, well, the purpose of the institution, whether it's a hospital or whether it's a business. The chairman is responsible, to my mind, to think ahead and float ideas, get ideas. He leads, he encourages, and he suggests. The committee or the board then looks at the ideas, and they have to decide whether they're good ideas or bad ideas. If they're good ideas, they act on them. If they're bad ideas, they dispose of them. And to me, that is the function of the chairman. But he also has a committee, or should have a committee, who's doing some thinking as well. Okay? So his committee should also be thinking up ideas. The present manager, Mr. Peter Berwick, I've been closely associated with him for most of the time I've been chairman. He became secretary 2 years after I became chairman. So we've worked together for a long time, and he has ideas and I have ideas. We work very well together, and this makes quite a good team, I think.
Of the many varied fundraising activities used to finance future extensions on the hospital, how many were you involved with?
Well, the three auxiliaries that are present today, they've done a lot of the fundraising. That's the ladies' auxiliary, the Clyde and Clyde North auxiliary, and the younger set, Berry. We previously had a Devon Meadows auxiliary, which operated for something like 20 years, and a men's auxiliary. Now, almost the total finance years ago was raised by these auxiliaries. And we adjusted our fees depending on whether we had good clearing sales or bad clearing sales, and the fees went up or down. And that was a good way to do it until the health department, government started to set the figures, and that is, of course, is quite natural because they had to line up with the benefit organisations and so on. So, but that's the way it was done, and the fees then were quite low.
How successful were these charitable organisations in their undying efforts at trying to make the hospital a better place?
Well, they were very successful. In fact, without them, we would have we just wouldn't have made the grade because, well, I suppose we could have charged a higher fee, which we didn't want to do. We wanted to make the hospital as available to everybody. It was never designed as a hospital for the wealthy. It was designed for the man in the street or the woman who needed help, whether she could pay for it or not. And so we always tried to keep the fees as low as possible. So if we could raise money by some other means, that would have meant we could buy equipment. We keep the fees down and we could buy new equipment.
Were there any major setbacks or any times when it looked like the hospital couldn't survive or couldn't keep itself going? Or was it, well, from what it sounds like, it was pretty successful, but were there any setbacks?
Well, I suppose any business has got setbacks, hasn't it? There have been times when we've been very short of money. In the early days, I think, the 1950s, early 50s, we very nearly closed. In fact, the committee asked that the hospital be closed, asked the Charities Commission of the day to close the hospital or take it over as a an old people's home. And it was just through the efforts of a few people in the town who said, we need a hospital, that it was kept open. Those were very difficult days. It was immediate post-war. There was very little building material. People were recovering from 6 years of war. And so that was hard. But I think really those were the hardest times. And since then, since mid-50s, we seem to have gone ahead. We've had our ups and downs. Nobody keeps going upwards. They go up a bit and fall back a bit and go up a bit. And I think that's been the history of the hospital. But at no stage has it been as bad as it was in the 50s.
After learning of the hospital's gradual expansions, it became clear to me that without the efforts of the ladies' auxiliary, etc., the hospital could never have developed in the manner with which it has. Is this an accurate assumption in the sense that the hospital's development relied upon the inhabitants surrounding it?
Oh, sure.
In the community?
Yeah. Self-help, volunteers, and my hobby horse, I'm very keen on volunteers. For several reasons. One is if you leave it to the governments to do, they don't do it. Things are done by people who want to do things, and volunteers in this community, whether you look at the school or the church or the hospital or the library, it's done by volunteers. And not only do the volunteers do something useful, but they get something out of it. And they gain by the fact that they are doing things. And to use a medical term, therapeutically, this is very good for the volunteer. And it's very good for society. It's very good for the community. Now, we've acknowledged the fact that the people of previous generation, perhaps, they have done something. And so we acknowledge this by giving pension as a concession. Now, the people who worked 20 years ago are now pensioners. So we've reduced our fees at the hospital for pensioners.
Is it like pay back their efforts?
Yeah, it's an acknowledgement of what they've done, and it's ploughing back their goodwill back into the life of the hospital. Now, last year we had something like 770 patient days were spent by pensioners. Now, that's about a seventh of the hospital turnover, which if you look at it in beds, was about 3.5 beds occupied by pensioners every day of the year out of 23. So to do that, the hospital reduces its fee, and it foregoes, last year it foregoes, or forewent, what's the word? Anyway, it reduced its income by $44,000 in the year in order to supply the pensioners with this type of service. So, sure, the volunteers have done a tremendous job, and we're paying it back a bit by inviting them in as pensioners now.
Do you think this provided the general public with a sense of responsibility and belonging, as really the Berwick Hospital, or the Berwick Bush Nursing Hospital, was a symbol of their hard work?
Yeah. Sure. Those who see the hospital are quite amazed. If you look at it from outside, you're quite amazed to realise what's inside it. And those who use it are delighted with what they find. By and large, I think the community is grateful. They show this by their support, they show it by their coming to hospital functions, they show it by their gifts, their donations, and not big money donations, but works of art, craft, which they come in and we sell to raise funds. I think the community is grateful for it. And the other thing is, I think the community gets a sense of security because they feel that in the hospital they have a place that they can go if they're ill. Or if they've got a problem, they've got somewhere to go with somebody who cares for them.
It's definitely a reassurance. Mm. So, how did they react in seeing your efforts eventuate or pay off after after their efforts were put in?
How do you mean?
Well, I suppose they would have been so, you know, excited seeing the hospital continually, you know, expand,
yeah,
knowing that it was their hard work. You know. Was their reaction one of excitement or
Yeah.
Relief?
I think it's relief to see that it's there, but I think excitement to know that they've had a part of it and it's been successful.
With the knowledge of how hard you in particular had worked, could you please explain the feeling of satisfaction you must have felt personally? Oh, well, after all, you've been a major part of the hospital.
Well, it's satisfying to see something there, sure. It's not all personal satisfaction, because it's a team thing, and there are a lot of other people involved. There's a board, there's a matron, there's medicos, nursing staff, domestics, gardeners, and all the rest of them, all working towards something. It's very satisfying to see something successful. Their focus, everybody on the staff's focus is towards the patient. And that's great, that's the way it should be. And after all, the patient is what the hospital's all about. He's the important person. Committees and boards and things are unimportant provided they're doing the job for the person who's really important. And that's the customer, if you like.
So it wasn't necessarily a personal triumph for you, it was more sort of like a group triumph?
Yeah. I think we're all thrilled by the fact that we've got it, we've done it. But I'm satisfied, I'm happy because it's there, but not, there's no great ego trip as far as I'm concerned. It's been done by a team of great people.
Naturally, with an expansion in the hospital's physical size, so too would come an expansion in staff, beds, facilities and patients, etc. How small were numbers of beds in 1939 in relation to the hospital statistics in 1980?
Well, in 1939 we had 6 beds for patients, and in 1980 we have 23, plus that's in the hospital, but the hostel has 12, so really we've got an organisation of 35 beds. Today we've got probably 25 to 30 nursing staff. They're not all full-time. We use quite a number of ladies who are in the community, who have families, who come in and work for shifts. So we've got probably 25 to 30 nursing staff. We had 3 back in 1950, we had 3 nursing staff. One of them still lives in the town. Domestic staff, we have probably 25 domestic staff and ward staff. In those days we had 2. So it's the payroll today is a very much bigger sum than it was back.
And finally, after realising the potential of the Burke Bush Nursing Hospital, what does the future hold in store for it? Will expansions continue?
Yes, I think you can't stop still. You've got to move. If you stop still, you go backwards. So as long as we've got a community that wants love and concern and caring, good nursing and good medicine, the hospital will always have a role. As long as those qualities are needed. The only threat we've got, I think, is from the people who believe that big is beautiful, and who want to amalgamate and consolidate and push everything together into one great monolithic heap. They're the people who would like to see all hospitals in one place, and we disagree with that because we feel a small community hospital where we can give care and where we know people and the people are close to home, we feel that we can give better service there than moving them to David on Frankston or somewhere else. So as long as we can, we're going to keep this going. We feel we can do it, we can give a better service, and we can do it at a less cost. And after all, if you compare the Bush Nursing Hospitals with, say, the big public hospitals, or even the small public hospitals, we can give a service for a much lower fee than they can. So we feel that an autonomous, community-based, community-administered facility is very important for the community. And as long as we can, we keep it that way. As for expansion, we've got drawings for a new birthing suite. This is for the whole new labour ward area. We have changes to the theatre suite. We have provision for ensuite facilities in the hostel. And as soon as we get the okay, we'll build a 20-bed nursing home with daycare centre. We've got to get permission for that from the government, but as soon as we get that, we'll go ahead and build it.
Well, after surveying the grounds on which the hospital stand, there doesn't look to be too much room left for expansions. Where will expansions continue after all the rooms run out? Will the expansions continue after there's sort of no more room there?
Well, we have about half an acre which butts into Brayside. Brayside's next door. We have part of that block. On the other side of Gibb Street, that's on the south side of Gibb Street, we have a corner block on Gloucester Avenue, a weatherboard house there. And we have, not the next block, but we have two blocks further down, which are all owned by the hospital. That's on the other side of the street where the hospital is. So we've got ample room to build a nursing home. And so there's room there for car parking and for other buildings.
Dr. Stevenson, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sharon, for giving me the opportunity and the privilege of talking to you about something that's very close to me. And congratulations on the way you conducted it.
Thank you.